Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
That always reminds me of the Seinfeld joke. Do you remember that?
No.
He said, public speaking is the number one fear. It beats the fear of death. That means most people at a funeral would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said, he's not so far off, but it is a big fear.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. This is the best damn podcast on the planet. If you're in sales, if you're in personal development, this is for you. We're glad you're here. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling, and I wrote The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up? Thank you for being here with us. We are excited to spend the next hour or so with you because we have an amazing guest today. It's an amazing episode. Our guest is Diane DiResta. And, you know, did you know that 74% of Americans have fears of public speaking?
You know why?
Why?
Because there's an old saying that says people fear public speaking worse than death.
Ah!
And if you die, it's no big deal. You don't have to worry about it. But if you give a shitty speech, you're still alive.
Oh, my God.
That's what the problem is.
So Diane is an expert on public speaking, and she's going to teach us how you can turn that fear into a massive competitive advantage.
Now, we should explain that we kind of know Diane because we shared the same co-working space with her in Manhattan. And we would often sort of drop by her space on the way out the door or on the way to coffee. She was there. We were there. And we chatted a lot and found out what she did. But she doesn't just do things. She's good at what she does. And this is going to be a very solid, solid episode for you to benefit from, whether you speak to one person or to a group.
I was really amazed at the strategies that she provided and the tips because I don't think that much about public speaking anymore. I just sort of do it. And she broke it down in a way that you can actually use her tips on a sales call with a prospect. Like when it's time for you to go into demo mode or public speaking mode in front of a group, she's going to have some real hardcore amazing tips for you.
Before we get to Diane, let's go for the five-star review. If we're Nada, are you there?
I am there. And we have a new one from Stick21. He writes, thank you for your time and effort in helping sales professionals and leaders become more, achieve more, and want to push for more.
Whoa.
How do you know Stick21's a male?
And how do you know Stick21 won't be Stick22 next year?
Well, hey, Stick, we love you. It is people like you that keep us going on the show. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that amazing review.
And for the rest of you who have not written one, stick it.
All right. It's time for Diane DiResta. She's going to reveal the wimpy words you need to eliminate when you're trying to close a sale, because who wants to use wimpy words? It can make you sound like a freaking wimp. And she illuminates how your word choice will help you stand out, especially in the social media world. So she just has a freaking amazing interview. Yeah. Take a listen.
So when you're an expert at public speaking, and all of the elements that go into that. Don't people watch you a lot more closely with what you say and how you say it? Because they're looking at you like you're the prime example. You better not trip on a word or say or, you know, all the things that, you know, you're on, you're literally on TV every day, correct?
Yeah, they do. They do. And the good news, Jeffrey, is that I've had people say to me that they thought they learned more just by watching me than by what I said, because I embodied what I talked about. And to me, that's the highest compliment. And the other thing is, I am going to screw it up at certain points, but it's all about recovery. And I find that that makes me more human anyway. So I don't worry if I make a mistake.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And did you start in Toastmasters? Did you have a humble...
No, I went to a few Toastmasters meetings, but I've never really gone the whole circuit. I started as a speech pathologist and then did a career change to a company called Executive Technique, which is like a Communispond or a Dale Carnegie. And then I was a management trainer at Solomon Brothers, so I had the corporate training background. And then I was assistant vice president at Drexel Burnham, and I recruited MBAs for the trading floor. So I've always been in training, learning, communication, and I learned on my jobs.
You know, speech pathology is a very important thing. When I had my polyps removed from my vocal folds. Twice. And I went to a speech pathologist so that I could learn how to talk from my diaphragm rather than from my vocal folds.
And yeah, because you're straining them. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been wonderful ever since.
Well, I have not practiced in many years.
I know how to breathe and talk and let the whole thing out without having any strain whatsoever on my vocal folds.
Well, that's great because you're a podcaster, so you've got to protect your voice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I have to say that speaking is the new competitive advantage, and people can't avoid this anymore. And what's different, because we've known each other for a while, I've been in this business, well, I admit to 20 years, but it's actually more than that. But certain things have changed, and whether you're in sales as a professional salesperson or in any business, we're all selling all the time. And one of the things that I've seen a lot of change in is that the way people are selling today, a lot of it is now seminar selling. Do you find that you're out in front of groups a lot rather than the one-on-one?
Depends on the industry, but insurance industry is big on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking has become so important for so many people. And I've seen people lose business because they don't have good presentation skills. And, you know, I want to tell you something that I read about recently. It was in Harvard Business Review. It was a study by Erasmus University. And what they did is they took three actors and they had them present some imaginary product to venture capitalists. And two of the groups didn't use gestures. One of them did. And the one group, the one actor that used gestures, actually got the interest of the venture capitalist.
So that's cool. So besides gestures, what are some of the key elements that you feel go into a great talk when someone is trying to present to make a sale?
Well, a big thing is storytelling. A lot of times people inundate people with data and facts, and that's not what motivates people to buy. So being able to tell the story, even if you're selling something technical, what is the story of the numbers? The other thing that I think is really critical is to have laser-like focus. When I work with people, I find that they're all over the place. They can't stay on message. They get stuck in the weeds. So I have a sentence that I give people to help them get clarity and focus. And it's this: at the end of my presentation, the audience, prospect, buyer will blank. And the answer to that is your outcome. So when you start with, at the end of my presentation, the audience will blank, now you've got the clarity. So as you're preparing your presentation, cool. It's going to keep you unfocused.
Yeah, well said.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I like that.
The audience will applaud. The audience will purchase. The audience will...
Not applaud. It's funny, Jeffrey, because somebody said that one time. Mine is the audience will applaud. And no, that's not what you want. You want an outcome.
But when I understand that. But when you're done giving a speech, and you're not asking for a sale, like if you're at a Rotary Club or something, and you're giving your speech, don't you want them to stand up and applaud?
That's always a great afterthought. Yes, it's always a good thing to have.
So why do you think that so many salespeople struggle with giving talks? And I'm not talking about like a talk where you stand up in front of 500 people. I'm talking about salesperson needs to present to 5 or 10 decision makers and their hands are sweaty and they're anxious and they're getting there and they're freaking out. How can they overcome that? And where does that fear even come from?
Well, I think it's not just sales, it's everybody. And when I started writing my book, Knockout Presentations, I did an informal study and I asked people, well, why do you get nervous? And they'd say things like, well, all eyes are on me. What if I lose my train of thought? What if I trip? And when I looked at the answers, Jen, it boiled down to one thing. It's the fear of humiliation. Mm-hmm. And it's a big fear. And when they look at neuroscience, that's really, that really fires in the brain. So what I do know when someone tells me they're very nervous is that they're living in the future because they're thinking of all the things that can go wrong. So what we try to do is bring people back into the present moment. And to your point, Jeffrey, the way you do that is through your breath. So there, I have a whole chapter on techniques for controlling nervousness, but coming back to the breath will actually slow down the physiology and the mental chatter and help you to feel more relaxed.
I want to clarify one myth about public mm-hmm. speaking. Mm-hmm. People say that speaking in public is they fear speaking more than they fear death. And the reason is that if you give a shitty speech, you're still alive at the end.
That's true. Well, there it goes back to humiliation. At least if you're dead, you don't hear about it. But yeah, that always reminds me of the Seinfeld joke. Do you remember that?
No.
He said, public speaking is the number one fear. It beats the fear of death. That means most people at a funeral would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said, he's not so far off, but it is a big fear.
I have found that people are not afraid. They're simply unprepared.
Big, absolutely true. Big point, because the more prepared you are, the less nervous you're going to be. And I always say it's 90% preparation and only 10% delivery. And I've worked with executives who take a presentation deck and they read it on the plane. That's not preparation. Sorry. So for one speech, you're talking about hours and hours of preparation.
What's the best way to prepare?
I think the best way to prepare is to know your key messages. Don't worry about memorizing. Know your key messages. Build in stories, because stories have a natural sequence, so you don't have to think about it, and it helps you to relive it. And then practice it over and over again until you start to feel comfortable, and then forget about it.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
I have been to about 2,000 corporate meetings where I'm one of the presenters. And in front of me will often be the chief financial officer, the director of marketing, the CEO, and with rare exception, they all suck.
Yeah.
They're all pathetically unprepared.
Yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
To a disgrace. And what I'd say to them is, you know, you have a great position and you have a position of responsibility and you're a chief officer, you're a C-level person, but you have a responsibility to this audience to be dynamic.
Yeah.
They're expecting something from you. The CEO doesn't need to say, well, last year we were 4.6 and this year we were 4.7.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I just got back from doing a keynote and it was called Influential Leadership, Transforming High Stakes Communication into Massive ROI. And I prove to people that there is a massive return on investment when you do this well. And I was telling those stories, some being CFOs. And one of the big problems about not being dynamic is they get caught in the weeds. And last December in 2018, I was interviewed by the Wall Street Journal about that topic. And the article was called Talkaholics, Sync Partnerships, Presentations, and Careers. And it's so true. And I keep telling people, you have to tell the story of the numbers. Don't take a spreadsheet and read every number and column. It's just not going to be effective. It's not
right.
Dynamic.
No, this one's remember a little, that, and this everyone one, zones out.
Yeah, this exactly. One's a little hard to read. Like douchebag. Slides are free. Make another one.
Exactly. Don't you love that? I know you can't read this, but, well, then why are you projecting it?
Right.
Or the other thing, here's another thing, going back to your question, Jen, about mistakes, or maybe it was Jeffrey's. One of the things is I can tell a novice from an experienced presenter immediately because the novice is choppy and they have not mastered transitions. And so I put a whole list of transitions in my book, but this is the typical corporate transition. On this slide, now, yeah. On the next
yeah.
slide,
yeah. This slide
you'll
says,
see on
yeah.
this slide, excuse yeah. me, that's not a transition. So, you know, I always say it's the little things that make the greatest impact.
So give us a great example of a transition that a diehard can walk away with and use immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Here's a formula. Now that we've done A, let's move on to B. Now that we've talked about sales, let's move on to marketing.
Another
area to consider is...
Yeah,
you know, those are
just like
those kinds of
normal conversation
yes.
rather than
either
yes.
they say this slide
yeah.
or, and this is a big or, they simply repeat the title of the slide
that's
as
so
you're
bad.
Looking at it.
That's so bad.
Yeah.
So I have-
Yeah, that's choppy.
I have a question that I think I'm more allowed to ask than Jeffrey.
What are you wearing?
Okay.
So,
no.
What?
I see her.
Oh.
Plus, I don't typically ask people what they're wearing.
Oh.
No offense.
People ask me all the time.
That's a male
question.
Yeah,
all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah. I get there. I get asked that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. is there a gender difference in communication?
Yes. But let me say, when people ask me who's more nervous or who's better, men or women, I say neither, because money and public speaking are the two equalizers in life. Both are nervous, both are unprepared. But when it comes to general communication, women and men do communicate differently. For example, men tend to be right more to the point than women are. Women want to tell the backstory. And you know, well,
right,
let me tell you.
Hold on. Let me define that just like this. Men remember ball scores. Women
yes.
remember what happened in a parking lot 4 years ago.
That's right.
I was sending someone a text the other day, like a business person. And Jeffrey's like, why are you saying all that for? Cut out all the first paragraph
exactly.
and just get to
exactly.
that sentence. And I'm like, but that's not friendly.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there are definite differences. And the other thing is our language. They've actually done studies, and men will tend to have more confidence in the way they use language. Oh, yeah, I can do that. Just do this, this, this. Even if they don't know what they're talking about, they'll say that. Whereas a woman will say, well, I'm not sure exactly, but I think
exactly.
maybe people like this. So I have a place in my book where I talk about wimpy words. So hopefully, if you don't mind, if we could sit down, because this is sort of a good idea, and I feel, and that... And I ask groups, where do you think in the sales process that these wimpy words start to surface? And it's the close.
Mm.
Usually people get nervous when they're ready to close and they start wimping out with what I call weak speak. So women tend to use more of those, like, this is just an idea. This is only a suggestion.
Right. I'm not saying that this should be done, but.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you self-identify?
Well, part of it is. Reading, listening, I'm a big believer in putting your presentation on your phone, either audio or video, getting feedback, going for coaching, but you need to hear yourself. And once it starts with awareness, and once you know that there is there's this list of wimpy words, now listen to yourself and hear, do I use that a lot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote a blog post called There's a New in Town. And you know what the new is? So. Everybody starts every sentence with so.
So,
and
yeah.
Well, on Instagram, okay. It's hi, friends. Hi, friends.
Yeah. I have an idea for you, and you can either take it or leave it. Mm-hmm. You go out to give a speech, and the entire audience is saying, who the hell is this? Mm-hmm. What is she going to say that's going to impact me in a way that will change anything that, okay. And so I recommend that you tell the client that you need a dolly, something that can drag something heavy, and a big pot of weeds. And you roll out the weeds, and you say, "This the difference between where I'm standing now and where I'm standing," and then you go behind the weeds, is what's going to happen as the end of this speech will result in you never having to use these weeds again.
I love it. I had weeds on the slide this past week when I did the keynote.
You bring out the entire bucket of weeds.
I love that.
I love it. That's great, Jeffrey.
Great idea. Well, that's another piece to a good presentation. It's the embellishments, the visual aids. Yep. So analogies.
Oh, I props. Use bar. I use a thing of plastic vomit.
Ugh.
I've used it for.
That's male, Jen.
Hang on.
I know. Yeah. Right.
You know what though? Yuck. Let me tell you something. I'll go back and do a client again, and the guy goes, "Did you bring your plastic vomit?"
Oh no!
Did you bring the way you use it is hysterical.
Yeah, and it's memorable. It is. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. And when you do it, and there's a shock to it, or there's a surprise to it, it grabs people's attention.
Yeah. No, it's true. I love your reads.
I tell the salesperson, "You're puking all over this customer."
That's true.
That is so true. And I'll tell the audience in a seminar, like some of you have seen this as recently as last night. It was one of those.
Especially in Vegas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely true. You can talk your way out of a sale. I've seen people do it. And that's why I added a whole chapter on listening in my book. And people will think, well, what does listening have to do with speaking? A whole lot. Because there's always an exchange between a listener and an audience.
Do you have specific strategies? Can you share a listening strategy with us?
Yeah.
Well, part of listening is being present and getting out of your mind and anticipating, because most of us listen just enough so that we can talk instead of suspending any judgment and being in the moment and hearing what someone says. So somebody once said, I think it was St. Francis of Assisi, who said, "Let me not so much listen to be understood, but to listen to understand." Right. Most of us don't listen to understand.
Stephen Covey copied that 1,000 years later.
I know he did. That's why I give the original.
Yeah, exactly.
It was St. Francis of Assisi.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I want to shift gears for a minute.
No.
All right.
No.
Yes.
All right.
A lot of our communication now is not just giving, you know, a pitch or a presentation to the customer, but it actually is speaking on Facebook or Instagram mm-hmm. Live. So doing these mm-hmm. videos. And so what do you recommend for someone who's trying to get into that to propel their business, whether it be their sales, you know, or if they're an entrepreneur or whatever? And what can they do that would make them memorable and stand out from the sea of other people also doing live videos?
Well, you know what I noticed, especially not just video, but in feeds, I get the most response when it's something personal. So whenever you can humanize yourself and talk about something personal going on, people relate to that and it draws them in. So you're, again, telling the story. And on location seems to draw attention. And then to Jeffrey's point, using props is a good thing. You know, anything. I have my boxing gloves here in my office. And in fact, when this book first launched and I went to Book Expo, I wore these big red boxing gloves and walked around, and I attracted a publisher from Singapore. And that's how I got the foreign rights to Singapore by that prop.
Cool.
So doing those kinds of
Did you beat the crap out of them?
I didn't need to. No. I was very thankful.
So I have a question that I think will help every single salesperson. Because most of the time when salespeople give a presentation, they do something stupid. Mm-hmm. What are the dumb things that salespeople or anybody does in a presentation, whether it's one-on-one or one-on-group? What are the things that you should not ever do?
Well, you should not forget somebody's name. In other words, don't call someone the wrong name. Make sure you know what you're there for and that you're prepared and that you're talking about something that's relevant. Make sure you ask more questions. I think one of the biggest mistakes, going back to your plastic vomit, is over talking. They just give it, they're talking heads and nobody cares about that. And the other thing I've seen is when they're going down the wrong path, sometimes that happens, instead of stopping and regrouping, they just keep going through their PowerPoint. And that's a huge mistake. Better to say, all right, let's take a break here. What's going on, or what would be of value to you? Give us some feedback. Should we continue, or would you like to go down the XYZ route? And I think that's more real, and you're more respected when you do that, and it takes confidence. That's a more seasoned person who can go off script, so to speak.
But what about the habits of a speaker? When they're giving the speech, what do they do that's stupid? I'm going to give you one of mine. Maybe that will help you. You know this gesture? Yeah, I want to kick people in the groin that give that gesture.
Jeffrey, for those of you listening, it's he's putting steepling. His two hands together.
Right. I say, do not touch your hands together. And you see it on the television all the time. These fake people, they don't know what the hell to do with their hands when they're done.
Right.
So what should people do with their hands?
All right. So what I do is I teach people a grounding position when they're seated and a rest position. And that's one hand over the wrist or both hands on the table, and then gesture when it's important. So one mistake is being a juggler where your hands are in perpetual motion. That is distracting and that makes you look nervous. So if you find yourself going to that, go right to your rest position. So you've got to come in knowing what your rest position is. Other things that people can do. Pointing is not a good thing. It's accusatory. So instead of pointing at people, use an open-handed gesture, which is more
friendly.
Engaging. Yeah, yeah. And friendly.
So those you can are be a politician and use that like first finger tucked in thing, which means I'm a liar.
Yeah, or you could be like Bill Clinton, the fist.
Yeah. Clinton invented that.
Yes, he did. And so anything that's repetitive is a mistake. Mm. So if you're pounding on the table or using the same gesture over and over again, that can be distracting.
Well, cool. There you darn go.
This has been amazing.
Yeah,
thank you for sharing all of these strategies with us.
Thank you.
We're going to link to your book in the show notes for those of you who can't wait. It's called Knockout Presentations, How to Deliver Your Message with Power, Punch, and Pizzazz.
Ooh. And people will find you.
Yeah, where else should they go to find you?
They should go to Diresta.com, D as in David, I, R E, S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, A, Diresta.com. And on the homepage, I have a free audio course, 7 mistakes speakers make and how to avoid them for maximum success. So you can download that for free.
Awesome.
And how do they find your podcast?
How do they find my podcast? Or what do you mean, my podcast?
You ain't got a podcast?
I am not. No, I don't have my own podcast.
She might be starting one, guys. But yes, in the meantime, go to her website, get her book, and send her a note of how helpful this was.
This is very helpful.
Love to hear from you.
I would challenge you to start a podcast because people need it.
All right. Well, maybe I will. And I also have over 100 videos on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ Diane Diresta.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Diane.
Thank you
so much.
Hey, nice to see you, Diane.
Good to see you. Bye.
Cheers. That was not just good, it was succinct and it was valuable to anybody, even if you're just talking to your kids.
I liked her.
She's
good.
She's very
smart. Yeah. She's a smart lady. Yep. I really liked her.
She's a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
But Jenny, I'm willing to bet that something happened in your life at some point where you were given a speech and you totally, I almost said fucked it up. Yeah. You totally screwed
you
it up.
Say.
Oh, I did? Yeah.
Actually, that's true. So I pressured myself into getting a promotion every single year. Like I thought that's what you do when you work for a big company and because that's how you make more money, right? And so it was really important to me. And I went to my boss and I said, okay, what's next? How do I get the next promotion? What do I need to do? How do I take this to the next level? And he said, okay, you need to do these kinds of tasks. You need to bring together this task force from all across the company. And in order to get them on board with what you're going to do to increase the renewal rate or whatever the project was, you're going to have an offsite meeting where you do a presentation to them and pitch it to them and sell them on this idea that they're now part of this task force. And your entire promotion will lie on that.
Whoa, no pressure there, honey.
No pressure. Now, I had never given a presentation, right? Like, I had presented to clients, but I didn't think of that as a presentation. Like, I just knew that as, like, hearing what they needed and pitching our products. And now, all of a sudden, I'm pitching something internally, which I think is more difficult because you see these people the next day. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, staring you in the face. And, you know, there's, I don't know, you want to look good in front of your colleagues.
Of course you do. And diehards, think about this. Jen's telling this story, and you're thinking to yourself, it's probably going to have a happy ending.
Well,
Jen's going to kill it.
Actually, it didn't have a happy ending. Okay. Oh. So I find out that this presentation that I had no clue about yesterday is now happening in under a week, and that actually the offsite has already been booked, and that they had already pegged me to be part of this deal. And that I'm giving this presentation in like under a week. And by the way, my schedule's fully packed. So, you know, prep for it at night. Now, I had no idea how much time people take to prep for presentations. Like, is an hour enough? Is 10 hours enough? What would be enough time? Well, I had no idea. So I get up there and someone told me that you have to crack a joke in the beginning.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And what's the joke?
So I get up there and I tell the joke, except I forget part of it and mess it up because I'm shaking and sweating and literally having a meltdown on stage. And you could see no one laughing because whatever I said wasn't funny. Okay, the only thing funny was probably me and how I looked. And my right-hand guy stands up and he tells the joke for me because he knew it. And he crushes it. And I'm like, well, damn. Okay, then I was told, this is the prep I got, you need to memorize your speech. But I forgot what to say after the joke. So I am literally dying in front of my colleagues and these people that I want to respect me and that I want to look good in front of, and sweating. And you can imagine all the things that come with that fear of public speaking. And again, my right-hand guy stands up because he had to pull the data for me. So he sort of knew my speech and he gives me like my first line. And so then after that, I basically recited the rest of my speech and it was the worst moment of my professional career.
Yeah, like, let's hear it for Jen, diehards.
I wanted to crawl into a hole and dig dirt on top of myself.
Now you're talking, honey.
Okay, that's how terrible it was. And that's the moment I realized that I got to get good at this. Like, and it was a huge lesson for me. And I don't know, diehard, if like you've ever been there where you really sucked at something. Like, I am telling you, whatever the level of sucking is, I was worse than that. Okay. I was horrific. And literally that night I went home, cried and had a glass of wine, maybe multiple, and booked myself into a 3-day Dale Carnegie Here's How to Present course.
Yeah, but look at it was a reaction to the fact that you screwed up. You might have never taken that course and thought you were good, and now you have the foundation from Dale Carnegie, no less, to be able to get out there and give your next talk.
Well, this was important, right? Once I realized how badly I messed up, and by the way, I did get the promotion, in case you were wondering. Once I realized how bad I messed up and how important public speaking was and how I had never been taught, I was in my 20s, how I had never been taught what to do or how to do it or how to prep or anything like that, I decided to take action. So many people, and maybe you've had an experience like this where you suck at something and then you say, I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just screw up and say, I'm never going to do that again.
Right. But for you, diehard, the lesson here is to say, I'm never going to do it like that again. And then go figure out how you can do it better. And so that course changed my life. I mean, I would have never become a speaker. I mean, I make money from speaking. People actually pay me to give talks now.
Let me throw at you that there are other things that can happen that throw you off. Jen had a problem with talking to her peers. That was intimidating. I gave a talk one time to a large group, and I was preceded by an athlete, the best athlete speaker on the planet, Terry Bradshaw. He killed it. He went a half an hour over. He left sweating, and some guy comes up and goes, and now Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm like, okay.
Oh, shit.
So I died. It's the first time, this was maybe 15 years ago, but I literally recognized that I was not prepared as well as I should have been.
This should be called, like, Confessions from Speakers.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be in the show notes. Don't worry about that.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay, but here's the deal. Let's talk about what she did.
Yeah.
She said salespeople fear humiliation during presentations. It's only because they're unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that need to go in and have it aced because they know not just about their own stuff, but about their customers' needs and their customers' business and their opportunities to be able to present value to that customer, not just go through a bunch of boring slides.
Well, let's talk about some of the lessons that we've learned, right? Throughout our public speaking careers.
Be prepared. Yeah. And people go, well, you have to have butterflies or you're not normal. I'd never had butterflies before I talked in my life because I was prepared.
Yeah. And don't try to start out with a joke. That's the worst advice someone had ever given me.
Right.
If you're funny, be naturally funny, but don't like memorize a joke to tell it. Do not memorize your pitch. Okay. You have to be able to be familiar with it, and you can use your slides or whatever visuals you're using as a guide to get you to the next point, but don't memorize it. It's a conversation, and you use stories to communicate, not just memorization. Because if you're like me in that very first talk and you forget your next line, you're screwed.
I'm going to share with you my preparation formula.
Ooh.
If I'm giving a 1-hour talk, I'm going to prepare for 10 hours.
Yep.
And if you're not preparing for 10 hours, I promise you, you're going to fuck it up.
And, you know, here's the thing, like, no one ever tells you how long to prepare for in a way it might take Jeffrey 10 hours, but he's been doing this for like 30 years. How long?
25.
Okay. 25 years. So that just same talk
off.
For 1 hour
yeah.
might take me 20 hours to prepare.
Just be okay? ready.
The thing is, you have to know inside, in your gut, in your intuition, when you're ready, when you're willing to stand up in front of an audience and give that talk. And that's only going to come from tons of preparation. Like that talk I gave at Outbound that I gave for the first time, because mm-hmm. it was a whole new talk. I must have said it out loud to myself, where I recorded it into my phone. I listened to myself so I could hear what I was saying, because when you're saying it out loud, you're not really listening to yourself at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I would play it back and I would say, oh, I didn't love how I said this. Let me try saying it a different way. I would say it a different way. So by the time I got up there, I knew what slide was coming next. I knew what story I was telling, and I knew how I was going to say it. And that's how familiar you need to be with your talks.
So diehards, get familiar with yourself. That's an order.
Hells yeah.
And get prepared for yourself. That's an order. And you can do it right now because we are done.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to prepare to get out there and make a sale, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or diehards. Love the show? Make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.